The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
We're going to return to this story of Alexander McCartney sentenced to at least 20 years in prison today in the North. Now, if you've got little ears around the radio, maybe for the next 10, 15 minutes, distract them or send them outside or into another room to do something else, because this is fairly heavy going, this stuff. It's a remarkable case for all the wrong reasons. Before we get into it, I want to play a little clip. This is Catherine Kearns from the Public Prosecution Service in the North speaking outside court in Belfast.
Every case involving child sexual offences is disturbing and causes long-lasting harm to victims. However, this was one of the most depraved, distressing and prolific cases of child sexual abuse that we have ever seen in the Public Prosecution Service. McCartney has now been held accountable for his devastating crimes, including the manslaughter of Simran Thomas, a 12-year-old girl from the United States of America. This little girl was one of thousands of victims of McCartney's abuse around the world. He has caused immeasurable damage to children and their families. Given the scale and complexity of his offending, the PPS worked closely with the police from an early stage in their investigation. We advised on the evidence needed to build the most effective case to get justice for McCartney's victims. Tragically, Simran Thomas took her own life after McCartney pretended to be a young girl and befriended her. When he gained her trust, he then abused and threatened her online.
That was Catherine Kearns from the Public Prosecution Service. If there are some still little ears listening and they ever want to talk to anyone, Childline obviously operate a free phone number, 1-800-666-666, so 1-800-666-666, or they have a live chat option on childline.ie. We're going to get the view of a child protection expert in all of this in a moment, but if you're just new to the case, to this detail, joining me now to discuss is Hannah Patterson. She's a reporter with Cool FM in Downtown. Hannah, what can you tell us about this?
Well, like it was said outside of court, it is a depraved case, and it was hard to listen to some of the details today. As you said, that he is from a place called just outside of Newry, and he had previously admitted to 185 charges involving 70 children. However, it was stated that the police do believe that the real number of victims is around 3,500. One of those is, of course, the 12-year-old girl from America who took her own life instead of complying to McCartney's demands. And sadly, months later, her father also died by suicide because he was so heartbroken. He had previously pleaded guilty to the manslaughter, and today he was sentenced to life with a minimum of 20 years. Now, this means that he will not be eligible for consideration for release by the parole commissioners until 2039.
So do we know what form, Hannah, the catfishing took? What did Alexander McCartney do?
So he would pose to younger girls as he would pretend he was a teenage girl himself and befriend younger girls on a platform. It was mainly Snapchat, but the court did say that it was other platforms such as Omegle and Instagram, but it was mainly Snapchat. And he would befriend them pretending to be a teenage girl and he would ask them for pictures, and as soon as they did send those pictures, he would reveal himself and his true face, and then he would begin to blackmail them, saying that he would send the pictures to people on their contacts and on Instagram if they did not send more pictures and more videos.
And as you say, I mean, speculation that the number of victims may have totaled over 3,500, which suggests he was doing this on an almost industrial scale. How long was he at this?
Well, it did say that he's now 26, but he began when he was 15, which is around a decade. And there was times when he was on bail, and he would continue to do this, even when he was told, you know, this is why the court said that he was given a life sentence, as he continued to recommit with little to no remorse at all.
So he had been arrested a number of times, and that's what the judge, I understand, was particularly critical of, that these opportunities to address the problem were never taken by him. In mitigation, I understand his defence counsel suggested he too had been a victim of catfishing, but that didn't go very far with the judge either.
No, that was all found out not to be true. He also said that he was a victim by his parents, and he made up a number of things about them, but that was all discredited.
Hannah, listen, thank you for talking us through some of that detail. Shane Dunphy is with us as well. He's head of social studies. Shane is our head of social science and early childhood education in Waterford College of Further Education. He's an author and a child protection expert as well. Shane, you're welcome to the show. I mean, there'll be people, and I think parents kind of horrified listening to this, and quite apart from the exact detail of the case, their takeaway is just going to be kind of the perils of the online world.
100%. I mean, this is not new, unfortunately. A colleague of mine in UCLA did a study of the very early online game Club Penguin, which an awful lot of very young people, it would have been their introduction to the internet in kind of the early 2000s. And she discovered that of the young women that she interviewed, all of whom would have been adults when she did the study, more than 80% of them, while they were playing this game, had been approached by adult men who had infiltrated the game pretending to be young girls. And they had befriended them, groomed them, and then started pressing them for explicit photographs, explicit conversations and things like that. So this is something that goes back right to the beginnings of a kind of our understanding of the internet world. And it is absolutely frightening. The reality is that the internet is an incredibly dangerous place. It has become the hunting ground for this type of predator. And the only way that we can empower our children to protect themselves, I think that there's two strands to what we need to do. Number one, and probably the most crucial thing, is our relationships with our children. If you read any of the literature on catfishing and why people who engage in this can be so successful, is that they're very good at identifying what it is that they're the people that they're preying on, their victims, for want of a better word, what it is that they need or what it is that they want, what's missing in their lives, what's the gap that they can fill. So an awful lot of young people who maybe are not being told that they're beautiful, or not being told that they're intelligent or funny or charming, you know, these people come in and effectively love bomb them. And even when the relationship starts getting uncomfortable and they start asking for things that maybe the kids are not necessarily comfortable with, the fact that they are still fulfilling this, the fact that still at times the young people feel, well, look, they're being really, really nice to me, they're giving me an awful lot of attention, that keeps the relationship going. It's really important that parents are encouraging their kids to believe that they are worthwhile and that they are worthy of proper and healthy love and affection, so that when they encounter, you know, dangerous and unpleasant people like this, that it doesn't have as great an impact. So having that kind of relationship is key. And also, of course, the relationship where your child feels that they can come to you if they're feeling unsure or uncertain, and that they can say, you know, look, this relationship is making me feel a bit bad, and that they can actually talk to parents about it, and parents can then do something about it.
Is there evidence, Shane, that children in the situation you described, that there comes a point where they realize maybe they're not talking to, you know, another child? They realize it's an adult, but because the adult is fulfilling kind of these needs, maybe for kind of assurance and praise, that they kind of persist with it.
In many of the studies that I've read, even after the adult has revealed themselves as an adult, the relationship will continue because of the fact that they are giving these kids, you know, emotional reinforcement that they're not getting anywhere else. And that's really, really tragic. The other strand that I think is really important here is education. I teach, obviously, you know, college, so I'm teaching an awful lot of young people that are in their late teens and early 20s. And when we talk, for example, about, you know, relationships and how they develop and evolve these days, what happens often very, very early in these relationships is that people are sending images of themselves. Mm. Sometimes even before any physical contact has ever occurred, intimate images are being sent. And it is critical that young people realize that once these images are out there, you cannot put the toothpaste back in the tube. Once it's out there, it's out there. And anything can be done with it. And often young people don't seem to realize this. They feel, oh, look, if this relationship may be fleeting, it could disappear. What's the harm? The fact is, you are giving a huge amount of power to an individual that you don't even know. Mm. And once it's out there on the internet, that's it. It can't be retrieved.
Yeah, the temptation, I would imagine, in some households, you know, where maybe they have the radio on and they're listening to us now, is to kind of just go in and switch off the PlayStation or to snatch the device out of the child's hand and say, that's it. You're going nowhere near the online world. And I mean, it's a nice idea, but it's probably impractical.
It's totally impractical. The reality is that the internet is a tool now which has infiltrated almost every aspect of our lives. And we all use it for better or for worse. And the key thing, as I say, is empowering our children to realize if there are alarm bells going off in your head, if those red flags are there, it's okay to say no. Another thing I hear from young, particularly young women, is that, you know, some guy propositions you and says, I want you to do this, whatever it may be. And the young woman says no. And then he gets offended and annoyed and aggressive and maybe even gaslights them into saying, well, look, you know, you led me to believe that this is where our relationship is going. Mm. And very often young women will then feel, well, look, I kind of have to do it now, even though I'm not comfortable with it. Actually, you don't. It's okay to say no. It's okay to stand by your own principles and your own beliefs and not be pushed into this. Teaching our kids to say no from a very early age, I am not comfortable with this. This is my personal integrity. This belongs to me. I don't have to give it to you. And if I say no, then that means no. And teaching young people that from a very, very early age. Also, yeah. Realizing, I think, something that often people don't realize until they're at quite an advanced age, I think, is that an awful lot of what is out there online simply isn't true. Yeah. People are not necessarily, even with the best of intentions, they're not portraying a real image of themselves. And an awful lot of what's out there is a kind of fiction, a version of reality that is not necessarily accurate. Mm. And teaching kids that what you see online doesn't necessarily need to be true. And the personality that people necessarily portray online isn't always a true composite of what they are. And these kinds of truths, and this is difficult because we're dealing with often complicated abstracts.
Yeah.
But starting, I mean, I encounter kids through my work who are using devices as young as 3 and 4 that are connected to the internet. Something that a lot of child protection agencies might disagree with me on, but I'm going to put it out there. I believe that as adults, when our kids start using the internet, because as I said, it is a dangerous place, we need to be helping them by shepherding them through, meaning spot checks on what it is that they're doing.
Yeah.
When you give your child a device initially, there should be an agreement. I am going to be checking, you know, what sites you're visiting, who you're communicating with, and there's going to be random spot checks. You won't get any warning, but I will take the device and I'll have a look. And I think that is fully responsible. I don't think that that's a breach of privacy. I don't think that that is invading your child's world. I think that it is just sensible. You don't let a young person get into a car straight away and drive off. There's a licensed driver with them. And no. I think we need to view these devices in the same way.
I suspect lots of parents would be in agreement with that approach, if not some experts. Shane, thank you for speaking to us. Shane Dunphy is the head of social science and early childhood education in Waterford College of Further Education, an author and a child protection expert. And we heard from Hannah Patterson as well, who had the latest on the case on Alexander McCartney's conviction and sentencing today, a reporter from Cool FM and Downtown.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.